In the first part of our feature, we've talked to Chris Strata about the design process of this passive solar house. In the next part, Ross Elliott discusses the idea of what a passive solar house is and how what was unlikely became reality. Here's the story.
We actually acquired the site for its location in the city mm-hmm. as much as for what was actually there on the site. Mm-hmm. We always had intention of doing an infill project here. Mm-hmm. We just didn't know from the get-go if we were going to preserve the building that was on site or preserve it in part or take it down completely. Mm-hmm. And it became apparent to us pretty quick that it made the most sense to knock the building down and start again, just given the condition of the structure. And there's always a balance and point in which you need to go, okay, is it worth saving? Is there anything here? There's an apartment building that existed just a few doors down, was recently demolished. Yeah. There had been intention of retrofitting that building or bringing that building back from the dead. It's now gone, but they've left the foundation in place. Okay. Given the structure that was here before and its structural integrity or lack thereof, it just wasn't feasible to hang on to it. Mm-hmm. So we took it down so that we could do the development that's here now. The public space, literally right at our back door, and I'm going to come back to that point in a minute, but having the public space right there, knowing that we're never going to end up with another large building right behind us that would create a shadow that would take away some of that natural amenity that exists here, was a real attractor to this site. So we're looking out this window almost due south, which is a huge advantage from a green design standpoint and definitely from a passive house standpoint. On the north side of the building, which is the street side, we did, with intent, reduce the number of windows and doors. Now, we didn't eliminate them completely because from an urban design standpoint, it's really important to keep eyes on the street. We want people to see what's happening out there. If people know that those that are inside the building can see out, they're less apt to do things that they might do otherwise. Mm-hmm. That's from a security standpoint. But I believe when we build, and especially build infills, I think it's really imperative that we find ways of integrating what's new with what's old. Mm-hmm. Whether what's new is a completely new building like this one, or whether it's a major retrofit of something that's already there.
So did you use any pieces from the old building into the design of the site?
We didn't reuse any of the materials that were in the building before. We explored ways of reusing the materials in other buildings, and we were successful in that. The vast majority of the building that was here before was recycled. We have a company here in Ottawa that provides that opportunity for construction waste, which is fantastic. At least 95% of the material that existed in this building did get repurposed. There were also some other really tangible things in the building that we did not recycle, but basically reuse. The kitchen, the windows, the doors, all of the wood trim, the hardware that was, you know, the hinges and what have you. In fact, all of the brick on the outside of the pre-existing building, we also reused, sold it to a mason who specializes in restoration masonry. That, I'm sure, is on another building in the city or sitting in his warehouse waiting to be used. That was pretty important to us. And if you go to the website, you can see a few photos of other things. Like, these things have value. It's not just garbage. And so what's important from a designer's perspective is to find the value, whether it's in the material or in the site. Mm-hmm. And from a passive house standpoint, again, yeah, this sun and the opportunity to literally get heat for free and get sun so that we're not spending money on turning on lights is a huge advantage.
You mentioned that there's a few designs. What about the windows and what other newer materials did you say would optimize the idea of a passive house?
Up in this room, speaking to the windows, I think is an obvious one. We're on the third floor now. This space, I think in many homes, would end up as a bedroom. But because of the views and because of the fact that we knew we were always going to put large windows here to take advantage of those and to take advantage of the southern exposure, we thought it made better sense to put our living space up high. Or at least I spend more time in my living space than I do in my bedroom. So we've got an upside down house. In order to put this much glass into a room, it's really important that so that we don't stress a heating system or cause us to need to put a really big, powerful heating system into a building, which is really what passive house is all about. It's trying to reduce or eliminate the need for mechanical heating. But to do that, we need to do some of the things like place more of our glazing on the south side of the building as opposed to the north side or the east or the west. In our choice of glazing, by glazing I mean glass, and other materials that make up the building envelope, the exterior shell of the building, it's really important that we choose carefully. With the idea in our minds, we wanted to create a building that frankly anybody could create. We didn't want to use space age or materials that were unobtainable to the masses. There's nothing in this building that you couldn't walk into any of your well-known large format building material stores and find. You might need to ask for them, but they're certainly carried across the city and the region. So where we really spent money, though, in this construction was in that envelope. Things like our triple pane windows instead of double pane, which is more standard, but also not only three panes, but thinking that went into the design of the frames around those panes are really important to minimize the ability to get from the outside to the inside or vice versa. We also spent money up front in insulation. So the way that we designed the wall, the amount of insulation that we put into those walls, the walls, the roof, the floors, even the footings of this building are insulated at a really high level to stop that movement of heat, of energy, money from the inside to the outside or vice versa. And it was Ross from HomeSol that really helped me decide through the design process where enough was. We didn't have an endless budget on this project. Any amount of money that we spent in our envelope, we couldn't spend somewhere else in the building. Deciding what that magic line was not my expertise, it was Ross's.
Before you started, it seemed to me that you were told that you couldn't actually build a passive house in this sort of climate. Why do you think that was, that other people didn't think it was possible?
Passive house at Ross is definitely better, I think, positioned. He understands the history of the movement more so than I do, but certainly through my own experience with Vert Design, I needed to be aware of what the various certification programs or levels of achievement were, the benchmarks, the targets, the goals, the what have you, that were common in the industry. Passive house was one that, as Ross was saying, I had some interest in, and did explore the possibility of going through the what I'll call a collaborative design process with someone who had expertise specifically in the idea of passive house. I was told early in the design process that here in North America, we didn't have the materials that would allow us to achieve the energy targets that were needed by the passive house certification. Those materials, and also systems, mechanical systems, are, I'll say, widely available in Europe. So I said, thank you very much. I'm still going to go and try and build the best home that I can using what we've got. At the end of the day, and definitely with some tweaking here and there with Ross's advice, and also in collaboration with other people that formed our design team, we were able to create not only a fantastic building, but we're also able to show people that yes, we can build passive homes here in North America using North American materials as opposed to having to reach overseas.
I suppose just coming back to the basics first, can you give a basic description of, say, what's the difference between a LEED certified house and a passive house? What exactly you need to obtain those?
LEED looks at all aspects of green, energy being one of them. Energy should be the highest priority one because that's the one that produces the carbon emissions, most of them, for the lifespan of the building. And so energy is really the most important part of being green. But LEED looks at all of the rest, including where the bus stops are, how far you have to walk to get to public transportation. Can you walk to the store? Can your kids walk to school? Things like the green roof that Chris is putting on this house, and collecting rainwater, recycling perhaps your shower water to flush your toilets with, all kinds of stuff, what kind of recycled materials you put into your home, just even the design process itself. So LEED is looking at the entire ball of everything that it takes to be green. And it does its best to try and assign a certain number of points to each one of those measures, whether it's water conservation, they call it energy and atmosphere, which is really interesting that we consider not just energy savings, but what the effect of reducing our energy use has on the atmosphere. Sustainable sites, such as doing an infill rather than starting a new site, using existing infrastructure, a whole bunch of different things are involved in LEED. And this house is a LEED Platinum house. That's the highest level for LEED. Whereas for passive house, they don't really concern themselves with, you know, how far it is to the store or something. It's looking just at the energy use of the building, and it's just a hard target. You have to be at or below 15 kilowatts per square meter per year. That's the amount of energy you're allowed to use for heating or cooling. So if you're in a hot climate, you may be looking at using less than 15 kilowatts per square meter per year for cooling. But in Canada, we look at the heating side. The second criteria for a passive house is the total energy use of the house, including your big screen TV or whatever else you've got plugged in, would be 120 kilowatts per square meter per year. Third criteria, the air leakage has to be at or below 0.6 air changes per hour at 50 pascals pressure. That's a kind of a standard way of measuring air leakage. Put that into perspective, that's about 8 times tighter than a brand new house. So if we build new houses fairly tight, this house is about 6 to 8 times tighter than your typical new house. An R2000 house, which most builders find rather challenging to meet the airtight standard there, is 1.5. So a passive house is about 3 times tighter than an R2000 house. And then the fourth criteria is that even though you want to use as much sun as you can to heat your house, you can't have the house overheating because that would be not very comfortable. So you can't overheat more than 10% of the time. So in the worst case scenario here, and perhaps towards the end of March, you might get a little warm up here, just might have to crack a window now and then. It might get over, I think it's 75 degrees Fahrenheit in terms of the, I'm switching between imperial and metric, but I learned both in passive house. So those are the four criteria. So it has to be comfortable, it has to have minimal heating and cooling loads, and the total electrical loads have to be quite low, and the air leakage has to be low. That's all the mandatory requirements. When we start looking at all the other aspects that you could use as well, we start talking about the carbon emissions perhaps, or the greenhouse gas emissions that may be used in the insulation, and balance that off against the greenhouse gases that we're saving on the energy side by putting more insulation in. And a whole bunch of other criteria. We look at the comfort level of the ventilation air that comes into the room, temperatures of the surfaces around you, and all kinds of other little criteria like that. These aren't mandatory parts of passive house though. And that's what sometimes confuse people. They say, well, you can't have a passive house that doesn't use a specific kind of HRV, which is only available in Germany. That's not true. We don't have to have the most efficient HRV on the planet. Our total energy use is under the target for passive house. So basically, a passive house uses around 10% of the energy of a new building code house. That makes this a very easy target for becoming a net zero house. You wouldn't have to add a tremendous amount of photovoltaic panels to this house in order to offset all of the energy use of the building. So really, the first place you want to go when you want to make a net zero home is make the building itself use very, very little energy.